PM board bombs.
Welcome back to EM Board Bombs. I'm with the excellent, amazing, incredible Dr. Marlena Wasiska-Kuhn.
Hello.
Nice, humble hello. If you are on YouTube, you can see us. Amazing. You get the video podcast experience on YouTube. We're also on audio, as usual, at EM Board Bombs. That is our amazing, amazing podcast company. We're the only dedicated board prep, board review podcast for emergency medicine. We're the ones. Take it or leave it. We're also really good at it. So that's good for you. A better podcast for EM Board Review. We tell you what you need to know for hashtag EM Life, as well as for the test. High yield information, 15, 20 minute episodes. Our motto is come for the stems, stay for the content. Dr. Wasiska-Kuhn, thank you so much for being with us.
Why, thank you. I'm happy to be here as always. Wonderful to see your beautiful face.
Excellent. Well, I think we just need to dive right into this topic. You know, yeah, I was going to think of something what Iltfot's up to, but you know what? I don't do a whole rant, but I'm sick of trying to keep up with Iltfot. He's so busy. Every single episode, he's doing something. And I know a lot of our fans and subscribers are like, where is Dr. Iltfot Hussein? It's like Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah. And I was just thinking that.
I know. And I want you all to know that, don't worry, he still is a co-host and co-founder.
He does exist.
He does exist. He is out there. He is just doing Iltfot things. And we all, if anyone is listening to this knows Iltfot personally, you know exactly what's going on. He's doing Iltfot things. All right, let's dive into the stem. I'm going to read it. And we have such a fun topic today. I love the title of this episode. I know. I apologize to our French listeners. Nothing personal, but this is such a great episode. We're so excited for it to talk about this very high yield topic since medical school. It's been high yield. You get a 23-year-old male arriving to the ED with a genital ulcer. He states he has multiple sexual partners. On exam, he has inguinal lymphadenopathy. And as you proceed to collect a history, the patient politely interrupts you and says, hey, doc, I appreciate what you're doing here, but I have Uber Eats on the way. Can we just get the shot over with in my butt and I'll be on my way? You say, nothing, and leave the room to order things. Which of the following treatments will appropriately treat this patient's presentation? Choice A, ceftriaxone. Choice B, penicillin. Choice C, doxycycline. Choice D, azithromycin. Marlena, what's the correct answer?
Before I tell you about the correct answer, ooh, I'm going to tell you about EM Rapid Bombs, which is our subscription. Yeah, I know. You have to think one more second while I tell you about EM Rapid Bombs. Exactly. It's our subscription podcast service that you can sign up for, and you get podcasts delivered directly to your favorite streaming app. They're 2 to 3 minutes each, very focused, and a couple times a week you get a new episode. It really just help with spaced repetition and drip learning.
I guess what's coming up this week and for the next 2 months? Boards.
Yeah, that's a scary thing.
If you haven't registered, you may want to think about doing that. I guess you're going to have to wait till next year now. But if your board exam is coming up and you forgot about it, no better time to listen to EM Board Bombs on Rapid Fire.
There you go.
Yeah, check out EM Rapid Bombs. And you can just go to our main website, emboardbombs.com. And there's an easy little landing page. You can pay on our website. You can use Apple Pay. How amazing is that? You can pay for it like with two clicks. And you're signed up. You get the email. And it is downloaded immediately to your own podcast player, whatever you use, whatever podcast player that is. It's amazing. It's hassle-free. There's no separate app, no separate website login code. You don't have to memorize an extra password like you have to do for the hospital. You have to change it every 3 months. None of that. Use different variations, like one number off or an exclamation point off of the password at the hospital. All right. So what are we diving into here? What is the correct answer to this question?
The correct answer for the man waiting on his Uber Eats, his treatment is going to be B, penicillin.
Penicillin, the old reliable. What are we talking about today? Let's get into it.
We're talking about syphilis.
Good old syphilis. So why are we calling this a French disease? Well, quick history lesson. You know, sit down, take, you know, if you're on the go, sorry, keep walking, keep doing whatever you're doing. If you're driving, definitely keep both hands on the wheel. But if you're at home, take a seat for a second, for 10 seconds. Let's tell you some history. The word syphilis derives from the Latin poem Syphilis Seve Morbis Gallicus. I'm so sorry for our Latin listeners, which translates into, quote, syphilis or the French disease, end quote. The poem originated in 1530. It describes the first recorded syphilis epidemic in Western Europe, which happened when the French invaded Italy. Those poor Italians. Gee, it's interesting how those poor coincided, those two little things. I wonder the connection there.
Surely some sociologist has written their thesis about this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. So this is a disease that primarily affects males. And African Americans are one major risk factor. The other major risk factor is men who have sex with men. Both of these groups are at greatest risk of getting syphilis. And it's a manifestation of this infection by, what's the name of this bug? It's a special type of bug.
It's a spirochete, which I love saying that word.
I love saying that word too. Spirochetes are so cute. This is not a cute disease.
But it's a cute little curly spirochete.
So this is a spirochete Treponema pallidum. And it can be transplanted sexually or vertically, of course, maternal, fetal. So why don't you dive into this a little bit more? And you know, so this is something we remember from med school, right? You learned this.
Yeah, you definitely
in medical school
drilled this stuff down. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know as many of the really mm-hmm. specific details like you did back then, but I'm sure you remember like the different stages of syphilis. It's pretty simple for what you need to know at this point. But you do want to know which stage the patient is at, because that's going to vary your treatment options. And we're going to dispel some myths about it. So,
right. I remember in medical school, sorry to interrupt you. I remember in medical school that syphilis and tuberculosis were quickly the answer on internal medicine rounds every day. That was always, and lupus, of course, but syphilis and tuberculosis was always at like backup, like it could always be this. And they would laugh, but they would never, I've never encountered an internal medicine doctor who said like, no, it's not that. Like they always like pondered like for a second and thought, well, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
Why don't you dive into primary syphilis here? This is the easy one.
Primary syphilis is the easiest one. The single, painless, sharply demarcated chancre, which is a fancy name for the ulcer. It has a clean base. However, this is not always reliable. The classic presentation has a low sensitivity of like 30%, but a higher specificity of 98%. So if you do see it, you're pretty good there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's more than one chancre, and some of them may actually be painful. It can occur on the penis, the vulva, the cervix, the anus, the oral cavity. It depends on what the point of sexual contact was. Mm-hmm. It usually occurs from like 9 to 90 days after inoculation, and it'll resolve.
Range.
Yeah, 9 to 90. And it resolves without any scarring within 6 weeks. So in short, if you see any genital ulcer, painful or not, you should probably just treat for syphilis.
Yeah, it's crazy because we're all taught, rightly so, this is a painless ulcer. But in general, if you get a painful ulcer too, just assume it's syphilis, honestly. If you got any type of ulcer on the penis or any other sexual area, we talk about genital area, you just need to treat for syphilis because we just said it right here. It can definitely be painful. It can be itchy too. It's not just like, oh, here's an ulcer and doesn't bother me.
They're not going to be like, this doesn't hurt. I mean, even I think the emotional pain of the ulcer is probably also pretty persistent.
Yes, exactly.
I had someone who came in and thought it was because he was like, it's a bite mark. Someone bit me. And I was like, you remember that? And he was like, well, what else could it be? And I was like, I think it's syphilis. Yeah. It was syphilis.
Yeah. He's like, no, it's just minding my own business.
Just minding my own business. Got bit.
All right. So secondary syphilis.
Yeah, secondary syphilis, it's about 3 months after the initial infection, because remember the chancre, 90 days.
Yes.
So during that time, the bacteria moves from the initial chancre into the bloodstream, and it travels via the lymphatic system. So you remember the patient in our question stem had inguinal lymphadenopathy. Mm-hmm. The patient will have generalized lymphadenopathy and a non-pruritic maculopapular rash that involves the palms and soles.
That's your favorite word. I put that there for you.
Palms and soles, maculopapular.
Yeah. Your favorite word, maculopapular rash. Yes, if fans of the podcast know, from a few weeks ago, we discussed Marlena's hatred of the word maculopapular. And those poor medical students who say that if they're on shift, they have to go to timeout.
It's a non-pruritic rash consisting of macules and papules.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I like that. So what is it? What's color? What's the color usually?
This is copper colored is how it's classically described. Yes.
Or bronze.
The palms and soles thing is pretty reliable. Mm-hmm. Like 80% of patients can have that.
And if you remember our last podcast, we talked about Stevens-Johnson a few weeks ago, Stevens and their Johnsons. And we mentioned specifically a mnemonic that I came up with that Marlena just loved. She laughed at me the whole time. Mnemonic rash, which I'm not going to repeat it here, but just go check out that episode. I think it's episode 196, 197, Stevens-Johnson syndrome. We specifically mentioned specific conditions that cause rash on the palms and soles. There's really only like four or five you could ever be tested on that cover that. And I'm sorry we don't have time to go over that today, but go check it out. It's another excuse to listen to another high yield episode. So what about after the secondary phase? So we get the primary phase was a chancre, secondary phase, which is essentially rash, let's be honest, on the palms and soles. Mm-hmm. And the third phase is now there's a latent phase, which I love phases like this because it's like, okay, so nothing.
Yeah, the latent phase, nothing. People forget about it because there's nothing to really remember.
No.
But it can last for like years and years where the patient has no symptoms. Most patients in the US and other developed countries will be treated by this point and won't advance past it. But you will see these weird tertiary syphilis patients. You can definitely use this one
right
on your like
the neurology
rounds.
Critical care neuro stuff that Marlene is really into. Tell us about it. Tell us about this tertiary syphilis clinic you're running.
So in like a third of untreated individuals after their latent phase, like it could be up to 25 years later, they're going to get something called gummatous syphilis.
Or gummatous if you're from Canada.
Gummatous?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Gummas is what I remember. They get cardiovascular syphilis, neurosyphilis, ocular syphilis too.
Sure. Throw that in there.
Tertiary syphilis is no good. It's got a mortality rate of 20%. Mm-hmm. Those gummas that I mentioned, those are painless but indurated nodules over the skin, and they can also occur in like your liver, your spleen, the bone. They ulcerate, they scar. They would go away completely with antibiotic treatments. You can kind of use that if someone is getting antibiotics to see if they're responding. Mm-hmm. The two scariest complications, we talked about meningitis, and then there's also syphilitic aortitis.
It's like the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
Hey, do you like treating aortitis and aortic ulcerations? I'm a little scared. Okay, well, why don't we throw in syphilis there too?
Syphilis.
Syphilis.
Good luck.
Yeah, scary stuff.
Yeah. So if a patient has a positive RPR and there's a suspicion for cardiovascular syphilis, get a CT angiography of the aorta. If the patient is stable and if they're not just, you know, exploding their aorta out of this large syphilitic ulcer.
I'm just laughing at like the poor med student on shift. And, like the patient has syphilis and they're having chest pain and the med student's like, we need to get a CTA aorta. And then the attending's like, what?
He's like, what are you talking about?
Where'd you jump to? Hey, what's the connection here between HIV and STDs though? This is really important to keep in mind.
Yeah, this one is really important. For sure. So HIV and other STD presentations will strongly raise your likelihood and your risk of having syphilis as well, especially with HIV. And we actually know that infection with HIV can lead to more rapid progression of syphilis to both the secondary and tertiary stages, especially to neurosyphilis. So it's really important that you test anybody with HIV for syphilis, not just gonorrhea, chlamydia.
This is so important, and we leave it off so much. You know, another one we leave off all the time too, we're not talking about this podcast, but is Trichomonas. We leave Trichomonas off a lot, and that is an STD, obviously. And I see a lot of tests being ordered at my academic shop from residents or students that suggest STD testing. They say, oh yeah, you know, GC testing. I'm like, you're forgetting like, you know, Trichomonas, and you don't have to test, you know, the guidelines say you don't have to test people for syphilis in every population. It's just high risk features or possible, you know, with the history of HIV. But in some populations, especially with the clinical exam or symptoms, you need to be throwing on extra testing for syphilis. And that test is going to be, unfortunately, a blood test. That is, I think, why the main reason people don't test for syphilis that much is that it involves an extra step of doing a blood test versus just peeing in a cup, getting urine sample or urethral or vaginal swab,
you know,
of course.
Yeah, just make yourself an order panel, STD. It brings up the HIV, the hepatitis C, the syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, all the things at once, and that way you don't have to think about it every time.
Right.
Dr. Briggs, who are those patients that are at higher risk that you should definitely test?
Yeah, obviously people with prior history of STDs or new sexual partners. And then we already talked about the population earlier, men having sex with men, and of course, people with HIV. Those people need the specific laboratory test to test for syphilis. Now, there's two tests here. One is the RPR, the rapid plasma reagent, which is the one you're going to use the most. There's another thing called a VDRL, Venereal Disease Research Laboratory, which sounds like something out of Resident Evil. I don't know why I just thought of the Umbrella Corporation. I'm not a big Resident Evil fan, but I know enough to link that to the Umbrella Corporation. So I hope Resident Evil fans appreciate that. Drop an app review and give us a shout out because that took a little effort. Anyway, those two are screening tests. Now, they take like 1 to 4 weeks for these tests to become positive. So if you have syphilis, you come with an ulcer or shank or whatever, and it's like, yeah, it's been like a week, whatever, since I was exposed or something. These aren't going to be positive. Now, that doesn't matter because there's no place in the world you're going to get these two results back in their time in the ED. They just don't run that fast. They take a long time. They take several hours sometimes or more to come back. So because of that, clinical suspicion is going to guide your treatment, just like the STDs, right? If you're testing someone for STDs, I believe every emergency doctor knows I'm just going to treat them. Because if you're testing for them, you automatically are thinking about it. They may have told you something like I know my partner has this already, or I have the symptoms of it that are just classic for it. We almost all reflexively treat these people. And so same with here.
Yeah.
If you're worried about syphilis, you're thinking about it, you're going to treat them for it. So just go ahead and do it. Now, because these tests that we just mentioned, the RPR and the VDRL, detect antibodies against cardiolipin, they may be falsely positive in a lot of inflammatory conditions. We're not going to get into that. You may be having your memory come up from medical school, like, oh yeah, like pregnancy, right? And lupus, yeah. And even increased age. Doesn't matter. You're never going to be tested on that. Never going to apply to you in real life. It's just important to note that once these patients test positive for an RPR, VDRL, they're going to remain positive for life, making that rescreening process very difficult. There's some confirmatory tests, again, not going to be tested on, not important. That's that FTA-ABS or dark field microscopy. I thought dark field microscopy was the most Marvel Comics Thanos thing ever, the dark field microscopy.
It does. Sounds anyway, evil.
Exactly. So tell us the treatment here. Let's wrap it up. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, primary and secondary syphilis, easy. A single dose of penicillin G, 2.4 million units IM.
What a G.
Exactly. One little shot. I mean, the Spirochete, it's cute, but it's dumb. It's cute, but it's dumb. It doesn't know. Yeah, it doesn't know how to get around penicillin. One shot.
So medieval.
Yep. If a patient has a penicillin allergy, you can treat them with doxycycline twice a day for 2 weeks. Pregnant women with a penicillin allergy actually have to be desensitized and still
treated. This is so critical.
Yeah, still treated with penicillin G.
That's a test question.
Yeah, for sure. So remember, pregnant women who can't take penicillin, they're going to take penicillin anyway after desensitization.
Exactly.
And then tertiary syphilis is longer. You need 2.4 million units IM once weekly for 3 weeks.
So essentially three doses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's summarize here. Okay. So all newly diagnosed patients with syphilis should be screened for other things: HIV, gonorrhea, chlamydia, hepatitis B. Syphilis questions are just so ripe for the boards, and they're going to ask you the amount of shots penicillin needed for each stage of syphilis. We just said that. They're going to ask you the classic symptoms and the complications of each stage. They're also going to ask you what to do if a patient is allergic to penicillin. You're going to desensitize pregnant women and give them penicillin. And then you're going to doxy for 2 weeks for non-pregnant patients. Hope that's clear. It's so critical. Easy test question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave you with a foreboding, foreshadowing, cool scenario here. What happens if there's a strange reaction that occurs with penicillin when treating syphilis? Now, I talk about this on our Rapid Bombs this week. So if you're a premium subscriber, you're going to learn about a very fascinating high-yield board test question they love to ask. If you're not a premium subscriber, the main question is, why aren't you? And with that, you can check us out at emboardbombs.com to sign up. Marlene, you got anything else?
No. Keep it real. Get them before they get you.